Okay, well, let's just go ahead and get started. It's about 3:05 now, and I just want to say hi, everybody. I'm Kathy Hatch, and I'm with April. I'd just like to welcome everybody and let you know that this IELTS conversation is presented by the ILNet, a National Training and Technical Assistance Program of Independent Living Research Utilization. That's those ILRU folks in Houston. And it was organized and facilitated by April. So we're happy you could join us and are looking forward to a lively discussion today. We have about an hour and a half, and so we'll start out with an introduction of our speakers, and then they'll each discuss fun and fit, some recreational opportunities for people with disabilities. And we'd really like to keep this as conversational as possible, and I know there will questions will come up, you know, throughout the material. So please feel free to go ahead and ask a question. Let's just try to be as courteous as we can with each other and try not to step over people's words. But we do want to hear from you, so do feel free to ask a question if you have one. And first, a little housekeeping before we start. Everybody that's on here has seen that we can have some real issues with a bridge line. And I would like to ask everybody to go ahead and put their phones on mute. Now, before you do it, don't use the mute button on your telephone. Use *6. If you use the mute button on your phone, then if you happen to have, or your center happens to have that Muzak, you know, that plays, we'll get to hear that. So we would really prefer not to. So if you'd use *6, we'd appreciate it. Also, there are a couple of print documents up on our website, and the website is www.april-rural.org. Also, the link to the CART captioning services is on there. So if you would like to watch what we're talking about as the presenters are presenting, you can go to that link, click on it, and you can just see the conversation as it happens. That also provides us with a transcript afterwards, so that's really very nice to have. And you can go to the website and look at it again if you like. Just wanted to remind people, cell phones and speaker phones sometimes are a problem. Hopefully, the *6 will alleviate that. But if there's a problem, I may ask folks to change to a landline if they can.
You are now muted.
Today, I'll begin by telling you a little bit about each of them. First, we have John Nosane, who is director and CEO of North Country Independent Living up in Superior, Wisconsin. And his center serves people with disabilities in 8 northern counties of Wisconsin. John's part of the Wisconsin Coalition of Independent Living Centers, who created QILS, which is the Quality Indicators for Independent Living Services. And that was a tool that was developed in 1995 to measure best practices in SILS, and John is a qualified Quills facilitator. John is also an experienced April peer mentor and provider of technical assistance. He's an avid outdoorsman and has many years' experience with a variety of accessible sports. Gary Maddox is CEO of the Southwest Center for Independent Living in Springfield, Missouri. He has over 25 years of progressively responsible management of service-related organizations in both the for-profit and not-for-profit sectors, and has worked for over 18 years in disability and or independent living programs and services. He has an in-depth knowledge of systems advocacy, federal and state laws, community relations, drug abuse rehabilitation, and services for at-risk youth and persons with disabilities. Gary's also a peer mentor and is a board member and is chair of the Training and Technical Assistance Committee for April. Lacey Thompson works with Gary at the Southwest Center for Independent Living. She's been there since 2011. Her greatest passion is the outdoors, she says, hunting, fishing, canoeing, and camping, and she's part of the planning committee for A Day at the Range, which she's going to talk about in a little bit, which helps give persons with disabilities opportunities to fish, target shoot with firearms and pellet guns, learn archery, and participate in many other outdoor activities. In addition, she guides accessible spring turkey hunts and fall deer hunts as part of Southwest SIL partnership with the Missouri Department of Conservation. And inspired by those events, she is now chairing the planning committee for A Day at the Lake, which will provide persons with disabilities the chance to participate in adaptive water sports such as water skiing, tubing, boating, fishing, canoeing, kayaking, and so much more. And last but not least, we have Monique Stamps, who says she has lived with a spinal cord injury at the C7-8 level due to an automobile accident since 1995. And every day she works to accomplish her dreams despite her disability with a smile on her face. I can attest to that, too. She is a happy lady. Since 2004, she has worked as peer advocate at Disability Rights and Resources in Charlotte, North Carolina, working daily with people with disabilities to provide peer mentoring around housing, employment, education, assistive technology, independent living skills, and other issues. Monique, or Nikki to her friends, is currently on a mission to eliminate barriers to healthcare, employment, and education for young girls and women with disabilities and to stop the isolation and stereotypes that hinder these women and girls from living independently. Along with her many responsibilities, both at work and in the community, Nikki is also a licensed Zumba instructor. She and two other friends are the first in the country to provide accessible Zumba classes. So again, these folks are here today to talk about recreational opportunities for folks with disabilities. And now I'd like to turn it over to John Nosain. John?
Hello, everybody. Presently in lovely Superior, it is 67 degrees. A little bit overcast. I just checked Lake Superior, the largest lake in the world. We don't have whitecaps, so that means this evening after work, I'm lucky enough to live in a place where I can either go fishing or scuba diving tonight, depending on the availability of my friends. So I grew up in northern Minnesota, and I've always been connected to canoe camping and things like that for my whole life. I wasn't necessarily a real athletic person. I was from a small town and I played high school football, but that was about it. So then when I got injured when I was 24, at that time my athletic endeavors included playing some softball and a little bit of fishing and deer hunting once a year. But after I got injured, I started worrying about, well, and motorcycles, too. I've always had a penchant for them. But I didn't worry too much about whether I'd be able to work, because I figured I'd have to work. I really was concerned with being able to enjoy life and play and do the things that that I always like to do and try other things. So my foray into disability rights was basically, I had a friend who had a spinal cord injury and was a wheelchair athlete, and they started a basketball team in Duluth, and I joined that team and got very interested in adaptive sports at that time. Learned how to ski. I never skied before. So I guess my thing in saying this is it's not necessarily outdoor endeavors for people with disabilities are not limited to athletes. Getting out and enjoying where you live, I think, is a real, real valuable community integration experience. Like, where I live, a lot of people complain about the winters, but I revel in it because I like to ski. And if I didn't do that, if I didn't have that hobby, living in northern Wisconsin wouldn't make a lot of sense. So anyway, as far as the integration, and if anybody's got questions or anything, you can just, you know, pipe in and ask them. But as far as integrating sports and recreation into independent living.
Hello?
John, she does have a question. Sorry. Someone, go ahead.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Okay, this is Hope, and I was just wondering if you have any notes that I can follow, because I'm sorry I'm joining late. And this phone call is being interpreted.
You know what? The call will be, we're keeping a transcript. There is CART on the, on our website. So yes, if you want to go to, www.april-merle.org, you can watch CART, and read it as we go.
Can you repeat that, please?
www.april, A-P-R-I-L, like the month.
Uh-huh.
Rural.org.
Thank you.
Okay. You can also join a live chat there if she wants to.
Okay, so, thank you.
You're welcome. Go ahead, John.
Sure. So then I became the director here in 1991. And at the director's meetings, I mean, people assume that we did a lot of recreational things because the director was a jock, which wasn't really that accurate because we had real strong core services. And the interesting thing about IL is, for me, is I see sports and recreation as peer support, especially for guys. You know, I'm one of those guys that would not probably go to a meeting and sit around in a circle and talk about my feelings, but sitting around a campfire after fishing and talking to somebody and the conversation leans to disability related stuff. By the way, I'm a single AK amputee. I didn't say that earlier. So I really saw sports and recreation as peer support and just another way of getting people with disabilities together and learning from their experiences. And it was an interesting sell to the rest of the IL community because some of the programs had recreational programs, but they thought, gosh, we shouldn't be doing this. We should be, you know, we should be advocating for access, and we should be doing all these other things, and it is true you should be doing those things, but part of access to a full life certainly includes sports and recreation. I mean, that's what my job is for, is to support my many play habits. So I always saw IL as recreation and IL as closely linked, especially because of peer support, and that's what we counted it as. Now, as far as programming, we had an assistive technology grant, wonderful program of which I am a huge fan, and chair of the NICL AT subcommittee. In our center in particular, we were the first center to have what's called a bi-ski this side of the Rocky Mountains. And a bi-ski is a skiing device, an alpine skiing device, where it's a seat situated over two skis. And it can be operated by people with very, very involved disabilities. It really revolutionized the sport of fit skiing. Before that, the Arroyo ski was the technology. And so we got that one. I used it. We had clinics around Wisconsin. We had the funding to do clinics. It was great for getting people involved. It was great for getting the community involved because everybody comes out and sees people ski, and they think it's wonderful. And it is wonderful. So it has a lot of positive effects. Plus, it's really easy to get staff to want to do it. And I know that, like, a lot of you are thinking, if you're managers, it's like, yeah, but I got them to stop doing all of that and doing everything else. You bet. You still have to do that. But the bi-ski led to another group contacting me. This is the first time this has happened. You know what it's like when somebody comes to you and says, oh, you're in a disability organization. You should raise a bunch of money. You should have this program, and you should buy this ski equipment, and you should have everybody ski. You know, I usually get a couple requests like that monthly, if not weekly. Well, I had a volunteer come in and say, well, I'll raise the money. And he did, and he raised 10 grand, and we bought, I think, three or four buy skis. Loaned them out to our local, other local recreational ski program. Courage Duluth has a very vibrant alpine ski program where I'm from, so.
Hey, John, can I stop you for 1 second? I'm sorry. Someone does not have their phone on mute. Could you, everybody who's on the phone, please make sure to use *6 to get your phone. Okay,
well,
I think we're good.
To, you know, an interesting program, and now those particular biases, the Milty biases, are now obsolete. There's all kinds of new stuff that's much better. We did the same thing with the water ski. We had the first adaptive water ski in the area, and we used to do a water ski clinic a few times a year. It got to the point where people would be lined up for this camping event, which we call rendezvous, which was fishing and camping, and water skiing was the marquee event. And it got to be where there would just be people lined up, and we'd pull skiers for two straight days. Then it got to be towards the end of it, after about 5, 6, 7, 8 years, other people were buying their own skis. There were other programs developing around. And there would be, you know, maybe 5 or 6 guys skiing, which was cool. But the deal is it spurred all these other programs. It was kind of like a seed event. Now we do very little recreational programming through our center, but many of us are involved with other events. I teach skiing for the local ski program, so we've been able to kind of spread the IL net that way. So at any rate, I guess the biggest point is that it really can amplify your other programs. If you're looking at an event to get a lot of media coverage, that's one to do. And that it is very much, I see, very much peer support. And the other thing that's interesting about this is that if you have an interest in something, just go out and do it. Figure out how to do it. If you wait for another program, another organization, or other people to kind of develop this program and make it work for you, you could be waiting a long time. And virtually every disability program has been started not by some organization that's involved with that particular sport thinking it's a wonderful idea to have people with disabilities involved with it, but by people with disabilities themselves who either are returning to that sport or want to do it. For instance, the rigid frame wheelchair, which is standard issue now, back in the early 90s and late 80s, when Quickie first came out with those, they were prototypes based on athletes' wheelchairs. And athletes would develop these rigid frame chairs, realizing they perform so much better on the basketball court and also so much better on the street. Now that's the standard. And I remember a time when you couldn't get, if you got your wheelchair through MA, you couldn't get one with a rigid frame, even though that's what you wanted, because the doctor that did the prescribing thought they had to fold up to be able to fit in the car. So all of that's an adaptation that's affected a lot of chair users' lives that comes straight from sports and recreation and straight from people with disabilities themselves developing the products and the programs. So, you know, if there's something you want to do or something you used to do, just go and figure it out. You know, go and try to figure it out. I know that I'm going to get cut off here soon, so I'm just trying to blather, and people can certainly ask me questions anytime. But for those of us with mobility impairments, water-based sports are an incredible, incredible opportunity. I live next to the biggest lake in the world. I have a tattoo of it on my calf. And that's very much that I've always been drawn to water. When I was in Boy Scouts and able-bodied, as a youngster, I hated hiking. I loved the woods. I loved nature. I hated hiking, but I would paddle a canoe all day long. The water is an excellent equalizer for those of us, particularly with mobility impairments. And snow skiing is basically a water sport because snow is, you know, water. A few other things about skiing in particular, Disabled Sports USA, that's your go-to organization. You could Google it. They'd have a website. They might have some programs near you. Professional Ski Instructors of America now offers in some of their areas the adaptive disciplines. our vision in disabled skiing was that you could go to any ski school at any place in America or hopefully the world and get yourself a ski lesson that somebody could teach you how to ski. And trying to get the Professional Ski Instructors of America's learning progressions to include adaptive skiing and adaptive technologies is something that we've been working on. Here's another thing a lot of people don't know. This also turns into an advocacy story here. Any of these ski areas that operate on federal land, the U.S. Forest Service requires that they either have a disabled skiing program or that they work in conjunction with an organization that can offer an adaptive skiing program for them. Now, this doesn't mean that it's free skiing for people with disabilities. This means that there is an ability for you to learn how to ski and some equipment would be available. An interesting point was a friend of mine that used to ski here in the Midwest and ran a program, moved out west, and his local hill wasn't very supportive of his efforts to try to develop an adaptive ski program. I gave him the phone number of a contact of mine within the Federal Forest Service. One of my heroes, a person with a disability like us, that works for the feds, and they happened to do a site visit because this particular ski area hosted part of one of the Winter Olympics. And they actually did not do very much in the way of trying to make an adaptive program available after the Olympics, and the feds were kind of not real happy with them. Well, as it turns out, after this guy contacted the feds, who contacted corporate, he said, turned out to be very, very helpful and very, very responsive. So if anybody tells you you can't access a wilderness area or anything else of the kind, give me a call, because we do have advocacy tools backing us up.
Mm-hmm. Great. John, can I put your email address on the website so they can contact you if they'd like to?
Yep.
Okay.
Another good sport for us folks is scuba. There's a thing in scuba called neutral buoyancy, which means when you counteract the sinking weight with the air that you have in your buoyancy compensator or your lungs, you can be suspended in the water column. And it is like being able to fly. It's a wonderful, wonderful technique. And if you've got propulsion down, if you can kick a fin or if you can swim with your arms, or we're still working on ways to try to get the technology for a real effective scooter, you can really have a good time underwater. And when we were in Puerto Rico, we had that learn to scuba kind of event. Some of you tried that. So don't be afraid to try that one out. There are some organizations there too, the diveheart.org. And a lot of the different agencies that certify scuba divers have their own versions of adaptive skiing, or adaptive scuba open circuit certifications and training programs. Another thing I know we want to talk about just a little bit before I let my friends take over is the whole camping, hunting, and fishing thing. There's a wonderful website developed by a guy I know here in Wisconsin, and it's called afarcry.info. Afarcry, all one word, .info. And he has state-by-state compilation of the different adaptive hunting tools accommodations that you can get, along with a bunch of different organizations. I never realized how many organizations there are out there dedicated to adaptive outdoor sports like hunting and fishing. So that is an incredible resource. There's also, of course, Wilderness Inquiry. if you're into that whole thing. And I don't know who's next, but I know I've talked for my 20 minutes.
You're good. You're good. I was just going to ask if there are questions. Anybody have any questions for John? Thank you, John. That was great. A lot of information. Any questions for John? Okay, if not, then I think we'll move on to Gary Maddox and Lacey Compton. I think they're going to be presenting kind of together.
Good morning. Oh, I
guess
they can't talk back, right? So, this is a good thing.
It's afternoon anyway.
Yeah, I like that starfish thing. Well, Lacey and I are going to talk about Day at the Range and Outdoor Adventure Fair. And basically what it is, it's trying to provide an accessible outdoor experience, you know, for individuals who have different types, all different types of disabilities, you know, in a barrier-free environment. So, you know, our goal is to provide recreational opportunities and empower them. So I think I just wanted to start out by saying that when you're looking at something like this, we looked at, well, let me back up. What we're looking at is target shooting, firearms, archery, fishing, and, of course, you have to have water for that, and then any type of outdoor crafts that might be of interest to individuals, and then outdoor educational activities and demonstrations. So I think a couple of the things that you have to think about when you're trying to do something, you know, like this that has is kind of multifaceted is you've got to look at the area that you're in and decide on, you know, a location. You know, if you're going to be shooting, you know, you don't want that in the town square or downtown areas or even sometimes the rural areas. You've got to get out away from, you know, from the main population. Then you've got to talk about a little bit, how are you going to market your particular event, both to the consumers that you are wanting to empower and reach out to, but also, you know, you're going to have to find, you know, a partner. So you're going to have to figure out some sort of marketing strategy that works best for you. And time doesn't permit us to talk about all of those kinds of things. But if it's a center-sponsored event, you know, you're going to have – it's going to require quite a bit of planning and a budget. Our budget typically for this event is around the $20,000 range. And the Center for Independent Living participates in about $8,000 to $10,000 of that. We plan for about 8 or 9 months out of the year, and when we do this, you know, we have some specific goals, you know, in mind that we want to accomplish. One of the things that we really like to do is empower our consumers. And I really love what John said. There's not a whole lot I like about John. I've known him a long time, but, you know, every now and then he comes up with a really great, a great idea or a great phrase. And that peer support, comment that he made is so true. And, thank you for that, John. We will want to stress that even more, you know, on the basis of the way you presented that. But what do you need the money for? You know, well, there's costs associated with putting on these events, and there's some things that we provide to the participants. It's open to the public, all ages, all disabilities. A lot of disability-related organizations are invited, and hold your breath, we even invite people from residential care facilities, and they bring their residents out by the busloads, I may add, and family, friends, and their attendants can, you know, can really participate. Some of the things that we provide are we provide lunch. It's nothing fancy, but it's typically you know, outdoor burnt hot dogs and burgers. And there's not much better when you're out cooking over an open flame than that. Sunscreen's big because we usually hold this in June. And if it doesn't rain, it's always really hot. And in Missouri, there is every bug known to mankind in Missouri. So insect repellent is a really popular thing. Then we try and give them a little hat, a bag, and some mementos. And I will say this, and I'm going to turn it over to Lacey to talk a little bit about it. This is what our tenth year that we've been doing this, and it seems like it almost grows exponentially every year, depending on the weather. If we have good weather, we can expect 15 to 17% turnout over and above the year before. But if it's pouring down rain, then we generally hold steady with our diehards. So I'm going to let Lacey, who's kind of the outdoor girl of Southwest Center for Independent Living, talk a little bit about this because she really ramrods this thing and puts it all together. So, Lacey?
Gary, can I ask you a real quick question before you go? You mentioned you mentioned that it cost you around, would you say, $20,000 to do this, and you guys are into it for 8 to 10. If you've been doing this for 9 years or so, what did it cost you in the beginning to get started? And how many people that came, like, say, that first year up to what it is now?
Well, I think the first year we had about 120 people out there. I don't really have the budget figures going back to that. That was in 2002 or
approximately
2004. But it was a really limited budget. I'd say probably about half of what it is now. Maybe not even quite that. So we did it on a shoestring budget, you know. And that's why your committee that's planning this thing has to be working all year, because most centers can't, they just can't write a check for $10,000, and we couldn't either. And it's a year-long fundraising thing for us to come up with money. And as I said, finding the right partners is important, and I know Lacey will talk about, you know, a little bit about our partners and how that works, which might, you know, facilitate some of the upcoming questions.
Thanks.
Hi, this is Lacey. Talking about some of the different activities that are involved in the day at the range, Gary had mentioned the firearms, target shooting, and this is one of the things where our partners definitely play a huge role. Because as we, most of us are aware, ammo can be extremely expensive. Equipment, just the firearms themselves can be expensive. And, you know, we try to utilize as much adaptive technology as possible, through the firearms, through the target shooting as well. And of course, we don't have a stock room over here that has a bunch of weapons and assistive technology for the weapons, or an ammo stash here at the center.
That we can talk about.
Right, that we can tell you about anyway. but definitely our partnerships with the Missouri Department of Conservation and some for-profit entities such as Bass Pro helps us in getting the equipment and the supplies that we need in order to put this event on. So a lot of partnerships with them as far as, you know, providing the assistive technology so that we can let the participants use different types of weapons regardless of their disability, to target shoot, to learn to shoot a gun. We have the sip and puff adaptive piece of technology where you literally sip a small sip of air and it'll fire a weapon at a target. So for someone who has very little or no use of, you know, their fingers and arms, this is a huge, huge thing for them to be able to shoot a gun, more than likely hit the target, hopefully, and, take that experience home with them. So very empowering. But again, those partnerships are crucial to something like this because it's a very expensive sport. Usually hunting and fishing is expensive. John, I'm sure, can attest to that. We all know how much money it can go into a sport like this. So these partnerships are crucial. We also do the archery, which, again, we have Paralympics come out and demonstrate shooting a compound bow with merely the use of a piece of technology that allows him to hold it back with his mouth instead of his finger and arms like someone without a disability. We use crossbows as well, which obviously is an accepted form of hunting for people with disabilities. I know here in Missouri you have to have a permit from a doctor in order to use one, so we have those available as well to learn to target shoot for archery, as well as, you know, canoeing, different types of outdoor recreation, golfing even. You know, we try to make form some sort of environment so that regardless of an individual's disability, they can at least give it a shot or, you know, see a demonstration or something else in order to feel like they have some more knowledge and participate in that event. Fishing is a huge part of the day at the range, and we are lucky enough that at our location, which we happen to use the Missouri Department of Conservation's shooting range here near Springfield, we are able to provide an accessible location for people, even in chairs, to get very close to the water's edge. And, of course, it's a safe environment, but use some adaptive technology as well in order to cast fishing poles, to retrieve, to hold them, you know, more securely, because it can be difficult to reel in a pole. We've recently partnered with an individual who has some really, really cool electronic fishing rods and reels that literally with the one touch of a button will cast the pole, and one touch of another button will reel the line back in. So again, it allows people with very limited mobility to experience fishing when, you know, perhaps they have not been able to at this point. It's also, like Gary said, a great time for individuals in some of the residential care centers around our area to get back out in fishing. I know we have a number of men who are in these residential homes that come out who literally live for this day at the range event because it means they get to get a fishing pole in their hands, they get to go sit by a pond, and more than likely catch a fish because it's a stocked pond. So just great opportunities to participate in something maybe they did once before, or maybe it's a brand new thing. But, you know, some of that equipment, again, can be very expensive. So thankfully, our partner in this event has already purchased this equipment and is more than happy to come out and spend the day sharing that with us and the participants of the event. Crafts, obviously there are some individuals that maybe can't stand the thought of sitting holding a fishing pole for an hour and never catching a fish and have no interest in firing a weapon. So we try to also provide some activities, not only for their family and friends, but for those who just, you know, maybe want to enjoy being outside, watching other people do these. So we always provide some way for them to make their own craft. Sometimes those are birdhouses made from gourds or milk jugs or wooden birdhouses. We also do turkey wing bone calls. Just something that will link their experience and their activity to the outdoors, but doesn't necessarily involve something that maybe they're just not comfortable with. And talking about our adaptive hunts, again, this is another area where the partnerships play a huge role, not just for equipment, but for locations. Like Gary mentioned, you don't want to be shooting a weapon in a residential or populated area. So, again, the Missouri Department of Conservation allows us to utilize their conservation land for the adaptive hunts. So the Southwest Center for Independent Living has purchased 12 fiberglass trailers that serve as hunting blinds. And we actually have a ramp where someone in a chair doesn't have to leave their chair. They can move directly into the hunting blind or trailer, and then we can transport them to the location, and they can hunt right there all day or as long as they wish. And then we pick it up and we bring it right back. So, something that someone in a chair obviously could be, it could be a huge barrier for getting out into the woods for the first time or maybe again. And so with these adaptive hunting blinds, it's made our hunting, extremely accessible, for people with physical impairments. Again, we try to use the adaptive technology, the different, pieces of equipment that, you know, can fit onto a firearm, to allow someone to be able to fire the weapon, maybe allow them to see a little bit better with a better screen attached to the weapon, all sorts of really cool, but again, expensive devices that luckily we have partners in the area that don't mind, hooking up with us for the day and sharing that equipment with, different individuals. We also have other costs that Gary talked about, that we get donations for, a lot of in-kind donations for the day at the range. Like I mentioned, we were lucky enough to get some donations from Bass Pro that helped out. We have, lots of area grocers in the area that help us, with some of the food donations, not just money. Of course, money is always great. But we try to utilize as many of our vendors and local area businesses and organizations to get, you know, not just the check in order to go purchase something, but those in-kind donations. Water, bottled water is a huge one, too, that just, I mean, helps so much with the expensive things. And so those are always things that we're looking for and you know, requesting and giving people the opportunity to give. And we're lucky enough to get a great response from our community. In that regard.
No, I will say that, you know, our partners are really important, and that's why I kind of started out with that. You've got to find partners in your community because your Centers for Independent Living, first of all, we are not experts in outdoor activities. A lot of our folks here at the Center for Independent Living have lots of different soft skills not related to their job, you know, and as the CEO here, it's my responsibility to figure out what are those soft skills and how can the center use them to provide different types of activities and things for our consumers so that our consumers have life-changing experiences as a result of those, whether it's the four core services or you incorporate some methodology of peer support, John alluded to, around building camaraderie and learning new skills, gaining confidence and things like that. So I just want to stress that that, you know, this is an opportunity for individuals who have all different types of disabilities to tap into something that maybe they never even knew existed. And, you know, there's a lot of judgment going on in our world today and not a lot of opportunities. And so when you provide the judgment sometimes, or provide the opportunities, those things that you judge the individuals on, especially around skills and abilities, that really goes away. Let me give you a great example of a person who was pretty self-confident that inspired a whole bunch of our other consumers, and that was Miss Wheelchair Missouri. You know, not exactly the girly type that you would think was going to be Miss Wheelchair Missouri. This girl could shoot. And she just blew a lot of clay pigeons out of the sky in front of a lot of young women and men in wheelchairs. And you can't believe the responses that we've gotten from different types of things like that from returnees. You know, they come back and they've told somebody, hey, look what we got, what I got to do. And I might add that this area is fully accessible. I mean, even at the shooting range, individuals with mobility impairments can get down range and get their own targets. So I'll close it at that. Probably got about 5 minutes left, maybe, and or maybe not.
No, we're good. We go till 4:30, so we're good. Anybody have questions of Gary and Lacey?
I have a question.
Okay, go ahead.
So all these. My name is Leah Ross. I'm from the UP in Upper Michigan, Upper Peninsula, Michigan. And you guys do all these activities once, right? So you only do them one time. They have to wait a full year before they can do that activity again. Is that correct?
Well, actually, the day at the range and outdoor adventure fair is once a year. But we also have the spring turkey hunt and the other fall deer hunt that kind of grew out of this. But this is just one recreational activity that our consumers are involved in. This is a specific event. But we also have kind of a support group or social club, and they do all kinds of other outdoor activities and indoor activities all year long.
So, because my job at this one up in the UP, we cover all of the UP. And what I do is we do something similar to that, but we don't just do peer support. It's more of trying to get them to have a healthier and social, become more social. So do you guys do activities like cooking, arts and crafts, or anything along those lines? Because I'm just hearing about the hunting, which is very impressive that you guys do.
Oh, yeah. We do all of those other things, too. You know, and it's just, you know, today we're talking about this particular type of outdoor recreational event that we hold on. But, yes, we, you know, we have cooking classes, you know, here in the Center for Independent Living. And it's really cruel and unusual when they have cooking class because they typically start about 10 o'clock in the morning and they start cooking stuff like Mexican burritos. Then it gets in the heating and vent system, and we're not invited to the meal. So, now, we do too many independent living skills classes to mention here.
And just to add to that as well, to tie it to the day at the range, when we actually have many, many volunteers help us with this event. So it's a one-day event, technically, even though we do the hunt. We had, this past year, we had around 1,000 participants. So as you can imagine, that takes a lot of volunteers to handle the load as well. We had over 200 volunteers. And actually, one of our volunteers that heads up the craft at the day at the range is a consumer, also now a board member who has been crucial in the craft section of this event, because she also is the one who coordinates the sewing club and the craft club here at the center, which meets once a month as well. So she, who participated and handled that here at the center, then helped us with Day at the Range, and now she's in charge of that at Day at the Range. So, you know, just a huge, huge step for her, and we could not do the event without her.
Okay, Lacey and Gary, we had a question. A question from somebody in the audience here from the on our cart. Has there been a date set for next year for Day at the Range?
It is always Saturday, the day before Father's Day in June.
Okay. That might be somebody from another state.
Hi, this is John Nothane again. A quick answer to the person from the UP. By the way, I'm a Finlander from northern Minnesota, so I speak fluent UP as well. And I am familiar with SAIL. But we also have youth groups, and they have various recreation components too, like you were talking about, like cooking and socialization stuff and being in the community.
Okay. Any other questions or for Lacey and Gary?
I have a question.
Sure. Go ahead.
My name is Melissa. I'm an OT. I work at Paraquad in St. Louis. And I missed the first part of this. I got on late, but I heard a lot of the different types of recreation activities. Do you guys do anything as far as exercise? Here at Paraquad, we have an accessible gym that's universally designed for our participants. I wondered if you guys had anything or any experience with that.
Can I answer that? Because it kind of takes us into our next speaker.
No, you can't answer that.
Yeah. Let me answer it. You go, okay, if you want to, as soon as you answer, then we'll move on to Nikki, because she's going to talk to us about some exercise.
To our friends
at
Paraquad, no, we are dripping with envy, though. We have been up there to your Center for Independent Living. We've looked at that. We have a 17,000 square foot building in our next phase of our expansion plan, and part of that space could probably be utilized for that, and we're looking for funding, so send names.
We're looking for our own funding. Yeah, actually, we're getting ready to expand ourselves. Our program has really taken off over the last several years, so we're actually looking for funding ourselves to get a new center for the gym.
Well, congratulations on it, I tell you.
Really?
Those of you who get a chance to be in St. Louis, you really need to swing by the center and check it out. It's
awesome.
Absolutely.
Thanks.
Great. Okay, well, that being said, then I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to Monique Stamps. Nikki?
Hi, everybody. Hey, can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. Yes, I am the lead care advocate here at the Center for Independent Living in Charlotte, North Carolina, Disability Rights and Resources. And I also am the program director for Women Embracing Abilities Now Charlotte, which is a support group, networking program, and healthcare advocacy, healthcare, fitness, wellness advocacy program for women with disabilities. And I got started with that because of, you know, my experience and as a woman with disability, having children and not having, it was a horrible experience, you know, getting, you know, OBGYN care. And so I reached out to other women with disabilities to find out their experience and started the support group and to advocate for equal access to breast health and OBGYN services and also wellness and fitness services. And after I had my children, I gained about 45 pounds and couldn't find a way to get the weight off and, you know, get back to, you know, my size and everything, you know, and find a way to work out. I didn't want it to be, you know, a horrible, like, oh God, I gotta go to the gym experience. So I joined the Y, and it's not very accessible. I mean, physically, yeah, from the parking lot to the door, it's accessible. But as far as, you know, because of the limited, dexterity I have and balance and all that, trying to use the weights were difficult, having to wait on somebody to come and help me, you know, put the stuff together. And so I tried a group fitness class. Zumba was the new thing going on, so I decided to give it a try. Fell in love with it. It's a Latin-inspired group fitness dance program. And I just fell in love with it. I mean, I just modified the move as best I could. I just started moving and found myself you know, started losing weight without even thinking about it, and would just go two or three times a week and dance. And it was just, I just fell in love. And so I had talked with one of the nurses at Carolinas Medical Center, which is our main hospital here, who was interested in the women's support group, and offered to do a Zumba-thon, which is a three-hour nonstop dance fitness party for the support group to raise funds. And at the Zumba-thon, they so many instructors thought, like, gosh, why don't you go get licensed? And I hadn't thought about that, and I wasn't sure how the process would work, or the Zumba Corporation would, you know, how would they react to or how would they facilitate training someone with a disability to become a licensed instructor. So I started doing research and found out that there were two other instructors with disabilities who both of them use wheelchairs that are licensed instructors. So a long story short, I just went on and got my basic and Zumba Gold license, which is for seniors or people who are beginners or, you know, people with disabilities. And also, I got my license in Zumba Tonic or Zumba Kids. So I teach all age ranges and level of disability. And it is, I mean, it's just a fun party is what it is. And I found that not only myself, but my students have increased confidence, self-esteem, got strength, endurance, energy, you know, building their core. I really can't even describe positive the benefits of just dancing and following choreography in group fitness, which I think is lacking in the disability community. It is group fitness. I also have interest in doing, you know, adaptive yoga, but unfortunately I don't have the funds to get to Minneapolis. So meet Mr. Matthew Safford, who kind of got, who is the pioneer in adaptive yoga. But that's one of the things that I really want to bring to, my center and the Carolinas is, access to group fitness, showing people with disabilities that they can, you know, participate in group fitness, because I know when you see the Zumba commercials and the materials, the marketing materials, you know, even in Pilates, all the group fitness things, you see these glamorous, itty bitty tiny people, and you never see with disabilities on their marketing materials. But we're out here and we're doing it. The two young ladies is Joanne Fluke. She's actually a ballroom dancer, and a licensed instructor, and Karina Gutierrez, Joanne is from Kansas, and Karina is from Texas. And, Karina, just, she teaches at almost every Abilities Expo that there is. She taught at the Miss Wheelchair America pageant. To expose these ladies and, you know, and other folks at the Abilities Expo to Zumba and group fitness. So it's just been really, really fun. And just hearing their stories on how dancing has improved their health and just changed their lives. I teach here at the, Evelyn Burt Park and Rec Therapeutic Recreation Department. I teach every Thursday, and it's been amazing, the feedback that I get, and I also get invited to do a lot of like disability awareness or, you know, women's health events. You know, these wonderful Zumbathons and things like that, to expose, just to get it out there, keep cranking it. To get it out there to the community. Because I also do adaptive sports. I kayak, water ski, but Zumba helped build my endurance to prepare for that, because we only do it, like, you know, seasonal and, you know, maybe once a month. And so in between time, the Zumba has helped me, you know, when it's time to go kayaking, I'm ready to go. My arms are all pumped up and strong. So it's helped out in so many ways. I'm trying to think of what else, to add to. I just really want, to expand, you know, group fitness, and there's also yoga, but I'm going to also look into getting licensed in Drums Alive, which is really with cognitive disabilities and the rhythm, you know, beating drums and adding fitness variations to it. So it's just lots of things out there that people with disabilities can do in the group fitness world. It's just a slow progression, but it has to fight it.
Got a question, Nikki. Someone's wondering if there is a website that people could go to learn more about Zumba and the accessible, you know, dancing, other activities.
Sure. If you go to, I would go to our personal Zumba website. But right now, Zumba is actually in the working of developing a program specifically for people with disabilities, aside mm-hmm. from the Zumba Gold. So, okay, let me get my Zumba website up. Bear with me here. I'll get it.
Okay. While she's looking for that, I will tell you guys that if anyone is coming to the April conference at the end of this month, Nikki's going to be teaching a Zumba class for us in one of our workshops. So really looking forward to that. I think it'll be, very fun.
You said April. This is Harvey Ross from Independence First.
Yes.
Is it April? We're in October.
Yes, but it's April in October. April stands for the Association of Programs for Rural Independent Living.
Oh.
And our conference is every year in October, so it's April in October.
Okay.
And we're going to be in Tulsa, Oklahoma this year. If you go to our website, you'll see information about it if you're interested in coming.
Oh, okay.
Okay,
tell Lee that no same says he can send you.
What's that? Say that again, John.
To my friend from Independence First, tell Lee Schultz that John Nosein says you should go.
Oh, okay. What's your last name?
Nosein. I was the guy who did your quilt review last year.
Oh, okay. I would definitely tell him that.
But my Zumba website is MoniqueStamps.Zumba.com. And I'll have, and Kathy, if it's okay with, like I said, because Zumba, the official program has not been launched yet, so I won't
okay.
have the information until it's finalized. But to, you know, read about all, you know, just Google Marina Gutierrez, Google Joanne, and lots of stuff is going to pop up. But
and is it Corina with a K or with a C?
C-O-R-I-N-A.
Okay. Gutierrez, and then Joanne?
Fluke, F-L-U-K-E.
Okay, great.
And can you, what's the website that I will go to again? This is Harvey Ross from Independence First.
It's moniquestamps.zumba.com.
No, I was referring to for the conference.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. That's april-rural.org.
Okay.
And just, you'll see conference information on there.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Harvey.
More than welcome.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Monique, are you good, or do you have some more to say?
And also, if you guys go to YouTube, Karina has lots of videos. I'm a babe. I just got my license in March, but Karina and Joanne have been licensed for about 2 years, so they have taken the time to upload videos on YouTube, so you can actually see some of the modifications that Karina has done. Her videos are really awesome, really cute, Yeah, just go to YouTube and type in Karina Gutierrez, or Angel on a Mission is the name of her YouTube channel. And you can see the modifications that she's done and some of the videos from her master classes at the Miss Wheelchair America pageant, Miss Wheelchair Texas pageant, and also some of the things that she's done at the Abilities Expo.
Great. Okay. Any other questions? Anything you'd like to ask any of our presenters?
Oh, I guess I would. Like, this is Harvey Ross from Independence First. And I guess the question I would like to ask, I'm a C6, C7 quadriplegic due to a gunshot wound, like, some years back. And I go to a gym that I've been going to, like, 11, 13 years. And I work out there, and I also work out at home, and I play wheelchair rugby. But I was also thinking about a couple of trainers at the gym about getting my license to being an active trainer. And I was wondering, because I wanted to do some stuff here where we can get people with disabilities to get together and, you know, do exercises to stay in shape and lose weight, et cetera. And I know there's some classes that they were telling me you can take online. Does anybody have, like, any information on, like, where you can go without having to go to school to get the certificate to be a personal trainer?
I don't know of any online. I know that there is AFA. Usually a personal trainer has to get AFA certified, which is, hold on.
What did you, what's that, AFA? What's that stand for, Monique? AFA. Okay. AF is in Frank. AA, there you go. Yeah.
Yeah, FAA certifications. It is, I don't do acronyms. I really, really don't. But let me see if I can find it right quick. I know it's like,
she's a Southern girl.
It's American Association or something like that. But in order to be a person or to teach any type of fitness, you have to get AFA. I don't know of any online training, because I'm actually going to go do that myself. It's Aerobics and Fitness Association of America. That's it.
Oh, okay. I'll look into that.
This is John Nosane, and I want to respond to, I know everybody talked about the expense involved with all this, and we're talking about a group of us who, 80% of us live below the poverty level. And that's one of the reasons that, especially with things that have expensive equipment involved, like skiing, a monoski or a bi-ski is probably, you probably got to have $3,000 to get your own. So that's why a lot of people end up in programs and skiing crew programs and cheap rental things. But an idea I had was, for instance, if you want to go someplace, say you want to go to the Boundary Waters, Canoe Area Wilderness, you got to fly someplace, you got to travel there, you got to use an outfitter to get all your equipment. You got to buy all the food, and you got to stay in hotels, and you got to go, and it adds up really quick. However, most of us have done things like camping and fishing and hunting because we have a friend or a relative somewhere, and you go there, and they have the equipment, or you've got your dad's old shotgun, or whatever it might be. So one of the ideas I had, I called it adventure exchange. And what we did was a group of about 5 to 6 of us went to Bellingham, Washington, and Doug Mackey from the local Disabled Sports USA chapter, they had kayaks, and they put together a kayak trip in the ocean. and basically it was whatever the expenses were. They already had the equipment. They were going over, I think, Labor Day weekend or whatever it was. And we just came along and paid for our food and slept on people's floors and couches. And it was a real affordable way to do it. Well, the idea was they were going to come back to Minnesota the next year and do a Boundary Waters trip, and we would be the sponsors, where I would arrange, I would scrap up some camping gear and some canoes and stuff like that. It ended up that they never did make the trip back, and the idea kind of fell apart. But, you know, that's still, I think, especially for those of us with disability barriers, you know, that say if you wanted to come on a charter fishing trip in Lake Superior, you know, that's $500-$600 right there without the you know, staying in the hotel and all of that. But if you know somebody with a boat, then you're basically paying gas. And if you know somebody else with the same disability or disability barriers, you might have a couch to stay on that is in a house with a ramp and has a bathroom you can use. You might be able to have some of those cool electric fishing reels like Lacey was talking about already on the boat. So, you know, I think that's really the future for us. For instance, if I wanted to go hunting in Kansas, I would get a hold of my friend. I'm gapping on his name now. Help me out. Brian.
Patrick? Brian Atwell.
Oh, Brian. He's on our board. I'm old, so I'm having a silver moment. But I'd get a hold of Brian and sleep on his floor and sleep on his couch and go with him. And I know the same thing if somebody wants to go, say, diving Lake Superior shipwrecks up here. Or my friend from Sail, if you guys were ever coming over to the Twin Ports. So that's an idea, I think, that we could grab onto and maybe try to make it work in other ways. So there you go. That's just a little commercial food for thought.
That's great. Great. Anything else? Are there things that people would like to add or thoughts for the closing up here? Or
I got one thing here that we didn't touch on, and that's risk management. We all know that as people with disabilities, people think that we're in danger of being hurt, or that it's riskier for us to partake in these activities than for the average bear. And we are really the canaries in the coal mine when it comes to acceptance of risk. And as we know, it's really there's not that much more risk for anybody else. And even if there is, if you're willing to accept that risk, this is America, and that's what our freedom is all about. So, and I do some pretty adventurous things. I'm a technical scuba diver, and I'm not an extreme skier, but you know, I do some real challenging whitewater canoeing and stuff like that. And when I'm signing up for a trip, even though I have the certification, for instance, with scuba, where you would have to have primix and experience in cold water and at depth, I don't tell them I'm a person with a disability till I show up on the boat. You know what I mean? And then when I do, they might scratch their heads a little bit, but after the dive, they all want to go diving with me again. And that's just one of the inherent things about risk and adventure sports that we as people with disabilities have to challenge those mores and challenge those people who don't think that simply because we're people with disabilities that we should not have the right of everyone else to accept risk. So, rah, rah, IL, baby, accept risk, and don't let anybody tell you you can't.
Good for you, John. Go ahead, Gary.
Gary.
Just real quickly, I just want to tell those who might still be on the fall on the phone and miss that political speech of John's that we can be reached here at the center www.swcil.org. And if people have any particular questions, they can just shoot us an email and we'll put them in touch with Lacey or the appropriate staff and be happy to help them out.
Thanks. Appreciate that.
And I am John, J-O-H-N, at northcountryil.org.
How about if I put up everybody's email addresses on our website with, along with the IELTS conversation, and then people can pick you up that way? That works?
That's great.
Okay. We'll make sure that that happens. I'll get those to Bill this afternoon. Okay. Anybody else have any questions? We're closing down on our hour and a half here. Anything? I thought there was one other person that sounded like they were trying to say something. No?
Can you hear me?
Hang on a second. We've got two folks at once. The lady who said, "Can you hear me?" Will you go ahead and go first, and then I'll let the other lady say something then, okay?
Okay. I'm Lois, and I'm with Eastern Oregon Center for Independent Living. Uh-huh. And I can totally hear, was it John or Harvey?
John.
Was it John?
Probably.
That was talking about the one that was just got through talking about not giving
risk.
Up and pardon?
Yeah.
Taking
That's
risk.
John.
Yeah.
No same.
John, yes. Because recreation is what I do with my consumers, and but I have a lot of females, one or two males, and I was kind of wanting to hear more about opportunities as far as, maybe I really liked having the capabilities of going out and doing new things, and I think that my group is probably more targeted to social network more so than hunting and fishing, and I was really interested in different things for crafts, and I just found it very interesting, but I know that the recreation part is very important.
Maybe you could get in touch with Lacey after the call and talk more about those crafts and things.
That would be great. What was Lacey's?
Well, I'll put it up on our website, and then we'll you'll be able to pick it up from there, okay?
Very good. If I could get any new info on things to do, it'd be greatly appreciated.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, there was someone else who had a question?
It was
Go ahead.
It's Nikki. I just wanted to say...
Oh, wait, I'm sorry,
Hey. Yeah, to piggyback off of what she just said, with the women's support group that I do, there's, we do spa days, and things like that, to incorporate wellness and socialization. And we do, soul collages and, things like that to kind of get them together and just do something that's relaxing and aromatherapy, all types of things like that that we do.
Now, do you go to spas or do you make things yourself?
We go to a place called The Respite, and they have massage therapists that they'll come to us, but we typically like to kind of go to their facility because it's, more calming and relaxing. Very accommodating. We have students from the local college to help, with transfers and things like that if need be. But they're very accessible and very good. So we, those are some other things that we do. In addition to the group fitness, as far as, because group fitness is good for peer support and socialization as well.
But getting together in lodges, you know, spa days and things like that are very beneficial to socialize and relax as well.
Of course they are. Thank you.
Okay. Well, we're coming up to our closing hour here, so I think I'll just go ahead and, first of all, thank the presenters. Thank you so much, all four of you, for being with us today. This was great. Lots of good information, and I hope that it was helpful to lots of people. And thank you, folks, who listened in today. We appreciate you being here, too. Thanks to our CART folks. For taking, you know, doing the transcript for today, and the folks at Skill in Kansas for recording our call. Those two things will be on our website within a few days, and you can, there's also a few documents up there that would be probably of interest to people if you want to go look, check those out. Just go to www.april-rural.org and look for IELTS Conversations. And if you have any other questions or anything, you can also reach me at kathatch, K-A-T-H-A-T-C-H, that's all one word, at charter.net. So this IELTS Conversation is presented by the IELTSnet, which is operated by the Independent Living Research Utilization Program at TIRR Memorial Hermann in partnership with Nickel and April. Support for the presentation was provided by the U.S. Department of Education Rehabilitation Services Administration, but no official endorsement of the Department of Education should be inferred. So again, thanks everybody. I really appreciate you being here. And this is our last IELTS Conversation for this fiscal year. So do please, watch and join us next year for hopefully some more interesting topics, and we hope to see you and hear from you then. Thanks, everybody. Bye-bye.